The following presentation is for mature audiences. The topics of graphic sex, sexual abuse, psychological torture, and cults are discussed in detail.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Show. We are a deep, deep, deep dive into the latest celebrity news, music, TV, technology. We throw in a little bit of our observations from the crazy world around us. I am Barnes. That is Leslie. We worked together for about 80 million years.
Hello.
And the other person is Cubby, I've known for 30 years. So please rate, review, and subscribe. Let's get into it. This entire episode, I'll tell you at the outset, is of sensitive nature. The topic is very controversial. It's a sex cult. We'll be discussing with someone who is at the top of this sex cult called Nexium, India Oxenberg.
Pretty amazing that she's going to share her story with us. She has been the series, docu-series on Stars called Seduced, and we're going to really get into details today.
Get exclusive video content when you follow the Pop Culture Show on Instagram. Unlock full video interviews and video bits you can't get anywhere else. Instagram.com/thepopcultureshow.
My name is India. I was in Nexium from 2011 to 2018 for 7 years. I went through something I don't wish upon anybody, and I'm still trying to figure it out. How could I have ended up in a cult where I was sex trafficked or involved in crimes that could have put me in prison? I'm trying to figure out what happened versus what I wanted to believe happened.
Our next guest has been all over the news, all over the television, all over everywhere. I was first drawn in with Seduced from Stars. We've all watched it and we're all super excited. Hello, India Oxenberg.
Hi there. Thank you for having me, guys.
Wow. I mean, we need probably 4 hours to get through.
I know.
Everything, but welcome. It's weird to say I enjoyed Seduced. I didn't enjoy it that way, but I enjoyed hearing your story.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I think it is a difficult watch, but it's an important watch.
It's a difficult watch, and let's just jump in. And I don't even know what part of the timeline to jump into, but when you first became interested in Nexium, from your mother bringing you to these events, was it the idea or the man at that point that made you interested? And then at what point did you feel that shift happen where it became about Keith Raniere?
That's a very good question because it's not, it didn't all happen at once at all, actually. My mom and I went to an intro presentation together and we were invited by a friend that we both trusted. You know, like everyone has that friend that tells them to go to that restaurant or that movie. That was this friend for us, but personal growth related. So we trusted her and we went together and I was feeling pretty aimless and lost in my life at that time. I was 19 years old. I had just left university and something about the intro presentation really spoke to me, and it had nothing to do with Keith Raniere because he wasn't even really mentioned, and that was all strategic. They kept him kind of like Oz of the Wizard of Oz, like the man behind the curtain that you don't really get to meet until you get to Albany, strategically, because by that point you've already gone through hours of indoctrination and, you know, you've absorbed their propaganda about the smartest man in the world, the judo master, all this. Can I say crap?
You can say everything.
okay. So all this crap that you wouldn't have really thought of unless the group had implemented those types of messages are then imposed upon you. So by the time I even met Keith, I had already gone through my 16-day intensive and I was in Albany and I was introduced to him at volleyball, like just as a student. I mean, that was kind of standard that students would go and meet Keith and it was supposed to be this like great thing. But for me, I actually thought he looked like a Teddy Graham, like one of those little cookies with the bulbous bellies. Like there was just nothing impressive about him for me. And it wasn't until I was in Nexium probably a number of years that my feelings about him and my like a sort of reverential experience started to begin, because that's how you were trained and that's how you were groomed. And that was something that I didn't realize until way after the fact.
Wow.
thank you again for sharing your story with us, India. And I want to say you look healthy and happy, which makes me happy.
Thank you. I am.
And watching this and watching the documentary and reading your interviews, you know, I could totally see how when you got into this, you were like, wow, these are my people. I have a purpose. You know, and now I have some goals that I can reach and like-minded friends. And I could totally see how you could be drawn into it. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time that you had just one red flag? And maybe how long into the program was that?
I want to say like immediately. And I just
really,
yes, because that's one of the crazy parts about this is that my mom and I have talked about this at length, but what they did was so slick, even from the beginning, that I just accepted it as logic because I was there as a student. I wasn't there to question what they were doing. And that's not even me. That's not my approach. I don't go into anything thinking like, oh, where are the holes here? But instead I was like, oh, I'm here to learn. So it was the sashes. The sashes really felt weird to me. And mm-hmm. I remember that they don't introduce the sashes on the first day. They do it on the second day after you've already gone through four or five modules to kind of reassure you how this isn't a cult. And then by the time that the sashes come out, you're like, it's some martial arts dojo and here's your white sash and these are yellows and oranges. And so there's just enough logic that you're like, okay, that's weird, but I can get down with this. And that's kind of how I felt from the beginning. Anything that you were uncomfortable with, not just me, but any of the students, they had a justification for or a reason for why it was okay.
That's interesting.
And why it was okay that you felt uncomfortable. Because that was one of their big, you know, selling points is doing the thing that is uncomfortable anyways for your growth, which, I mean, we've all heard that a million times.
India, was, again, thank you for your time. Was making the documentary almost like therapy for you? Like when it was finished, how did you feel?
Or was it therapy? Was that the therapy?
Mean, yeah. It was all of that because one of the things that I am just so grateful for the team that I had is anybody who participated with our project had the option to have free therapy through a fund that we set up initially, even before I got involved. So there was always that. So a lot of care and a lot of just focus. Oh, my cat is doing sprints around the room, but a lot of care and a lot of emphasis on just making sure that people's well-being was primary, which I think is really important, especially when you're talking about topics like this. But it was like therapy because a lot of the things that I talked about in Seduced, I had only ever spoken to with the FBI or my mom. And that's not a lot of people. So now I'm sitting in front of a camera and some strangers, some new friends or people who became close friends that I worked with over that year. But it was hard and it definitely took a lot out of me. I didn't realize how draining it was going to be, but I also felt like the more we continued to talk about these things, the clearer I got on why this was so important to do. Because at first I was like, who wants to, like, well, I don't even want to hear this story again. I was so tired of it. I thought about just running away to the mountains and ignoring everybody. But then as I started to talk and share, I realized that I was not alone in this experience.
I was in a cult for 7 years. When I was a child, I felt very loved, but I grew up looking for a more purposeful life. NXIVM was a program to make people's lives better.
I found real deep sense of community.
I felt like I was in the right place.
So how did we all end up in the clutches of a monster?
Keith Raniere is the most horrific cult leader.
He was someone that I really trusted.
I can't tell you how much guilt I feel.
My daughter, I've been in the presence of so much evil.
I had to ask permission to eat.
There's control of sleep.
Demeaning sexual acts.
It kept getting more extreme.
All over the globe. We don't know how many victims there could be.
The cruelty, it's beyond the pale.
I didn't want to be saved.
I had no idea the worst was about to happen.
So, India, you have to tell us what a typical day was like for you, because I know you were asked to move to Albany and there was a lot of sleep deprivation you only could have so many calories a day. So can you just walk us through a typical day?
Well, it would be a typical day in the construct of DOS. It was not a typical day in the beginning of my experience of NXIVM or Albany in general. Before that, I was just going as a student, and I thought that I would just come and take courses and go home, which was what it was. But when I was in DOS, I was required to move to Albany, and I didn't know
for those
until
that don't
much
know,
later. Yeah.
For those that don't know, explain just quickly what DOS is.
Sure. DOS was pitched as a female empowerment group that was going to be like specialized coaching, women only. And what it really was created by Keith in order to groom and indoctrinate and enslave women into what he wanted for his own perverted desires. We were unaware of that. So it was one big bait and switch, to say the least. But a typical day was very regimented, and it surrounded around, for me at least, active study related to DOS. So Allison Mack, in this dynamic, she was my master, and she had total control over me. Where I would go, I had to ask permission if I wanted to go home or just leave the state. In general, I had to itemize everything that I was doing throughout the day and send that schedule to her. I had morning tasks, evening tasks. I had restricted eating, restricted sleep.
Wow.
I mean, it was a very militaristic lifestyle, but with the guise of personal growth and pushing against your comfort zone as the backdrop, which in some ways kind of makes sense to you, because you're like, oh, I'm here to grow and push myself and do things that are hard and uncomfortable. And so there's a part of you that's logically trying to make sense and rationalize why you're being asked to do what you're doing. But ultimately, when I was actually able to look at it for what it was as basic as any kind of mind control technique that anybody else would use, either in a one-on-one dynamic or even in groups like ISIS. I mean, so many of the techniques that they used on us, not only in DOS, but the students at large, were very much the same as other groups.
Weren't you getting permission too? You were having to text Allison, you know, permission for so many calories.
Yes.
And that's unbelievable.
Yeah. And what I found out after leaving is that that is a common strategy that people use in even domestic abuse. Like, I was talking to a friend who was giving me a bunch of statistics, one of which is it takes the average woman 7 times to leave an abusive dynamic. But that people actually ration food out as a form of control.
Man.
And they were telling us that this was all for our own personal growth and self-discipline. So it's very twisted.
How do you feel about Allison Mack today?
Oof. Whoa, I mean, man. Yeah, I think.
What a psycho, that chick.
I mean, she is a really broken person. A really broken person that was so malleable to Keith that she, and so desperate for his affirmation that she was really willing to do a lot of things that other people wouldn't do. So,
but why? She,
I think, I mean, I have my theories. I think that for one, she enjoyed having this role of master. And I even talk about this in the show. And because she would tell me that, she's like, I like it. It made her feel powerful. And she also liked the affirmation that she was getting from Keith. And I know that that sounds really twisted, because it is, but she was that type of personality that is either, you know, previously susceptible to something like this, or she already had that kind of nature in her and he just brought it out. Don't know. It's hard to say, but I feel like I've had a lot of time to make my peace with her through my book and through Seduced, the docuseries. I mean, I did not feel the same kind of motivation to speak at Allison's victim, you know, at Allison's sentencing as I did at Keith's. Like, Keith was the type of closure that I needed. Allison, I've been able to have a certain amount of closure with her because I haven't spoken to her since the day she was arrested.
Which, you know, she's, as she sits on house arrest, I know Keith Raniere got 120 years, bye-bye, and she could possibly get, they're saying 40 years. At one point, were you ever concerned that you would have been on that track to get prison time or to go to jail? Because you were dancing a fine line only because you were a victim. But at some point, you keep going down that path and you're right there with them.
Oh, my God. Of course I was. I mean, but I was afraid after I left, once I realized really how close I was to being compromised and charged. I mean, I was compromised, but
how close were you?
I mean, I was a listed co-conspirator in a criminal indictment. I mean, that's pretty heavy shit. And I did not realize the gravity of that at the time because I was so stuck in the bubble of what they believed was reality. And it took me a long time and it took my just tons of help, especially from my mother, to just see it for what it really was. And to acknowledge that, and my fear, and one of the horrible things is that I didn't feel afraid while I was there. And I know this sounds like science fiction, but my adrenaline was going, but I had been disconnected from feeling fear appropriately because I was in fight or flight all the time. So once I left, I actually started having panic attacks, like full on panic attacks where I couldn't function because my feelings were coming back. But that's a really hard thing to explain to some people, especially my poor fiance that at the time was my new boyfriend. He was like, oh my God, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just lying here on the couch having a lot of feelings. I feel totally overwhelmed. I think I'm having a panic attack. And he was like, okay, do you want me to hold you? Like, I mean, it was so much newness for me to just deal with. And I've never been in a situation where I had to process trauma. Like,
I think, dating you must be really hard.
Oh my God, he's such a good guy.
He must be an angel because I'm not trying to be like funny. I'm just saying that like, hey, I want to introduce you to this girl. She just got out of a cult. and all joking aside, all of the sex, because it is out there as a sex cult, all of that sex that was happening, and of course we're uncensored and we can talk about everything, and I asked you prior if anything was off limits, and you said no. When would Keith Raniere just kind of do a cult booty call and just ding ding, I'm coming, take your clothes off?
Yep. Basically, I mean, he was that crude. It wasn't like there was no romance. There was no real relationship. This was literally women that were collateralized that at his beck and call, he could command to do anything. Sometimes it wasn't sexual at all. Sometimes it was like, we're going for a walk. I mean, he was trying to exert levels of control in all areas. And so sex was just one of those areas.
Where you mentioned on the show on Seduced, you talk about how when he came in and that the time when Allison Mack, I guess you were getting initiated into his whatever, and he had to come take a picture of you and like your legs are spread on the end of the bed. And
that was the seduction assignment. That was the first sexual interaction that I had. Well, I mean, I didn't see it that way at the time because I thought that I was doing like, I was pledging and this was my challenge that I had to complete. That's the way I was kind of looking at it. And that's kind of how I had to look at it, or else I think I wouldn't have been able to really take in what was really happening, if that makes sense.
India, for those that haven't seen Seduced, and everyone should see the docuseries on Stars and read your book or hear your book. Can you explain to people, because you were branded, can you explain to people what was going through your head as you're getting branded and then finding out what those initials were after the fact?
Well, the monogram as it is right now is very directly related to my initials.
Is the brand the same one going to be done in every single person that participates in the same?
Yes.
When I first heard these recordings, I was in shock. These were Keith's own words, basically designing and instructing all of DOS.
So I was sort of thinking of it like this.
Yeah, with the triangle and like a graph, and like it's a cool kind of alien symbol.
I think it's cool.
I mean, you can interpret it as a K-R, but you can say like, no, it's not. You know?
Or K, it's actually K-A-R. This is an order. This isn't a democracy.
So I think one of the common misconceptions is that this happened quickly, when it really didn't. We're talking about 5 years of grooming and indoctrination to the point where women are, you know, I mean, agreeing is not really the appropriate word, because there was no option to not be branded. So
really?
Because once you gave the collateral and you said yes to DOS, that was you agreeing to the brand. Because when you agreed to DOS, you agreed to ultimate obedience. And that was part of the structure. And we didn't know what that ultimate obedience really meant. And so you're talking about sleep deprivation, food deprivation, grooming, and also an enormous amount of pressure and stress from continuous collateral, to the point where you get to January, I believe it was January 2017, where I was branded with this group of women that I considered like a sisterhood of mine, excluding Allison.
That's recent. And think about that for a second. Yeah. 2017.
I think it was 2017. I mean, I need to fact check. It would have. 2017.
I think you're right. According to what I saw on the show.
I think it was, and it wasn't that long ago. And I mean, thank God that none of the women that I brought in had to go through any of that, and they got out before. And that was really largely to do with what my mother did with the New York Times, and what she was doing with people who were defecting from NXIVM. And she was disrupting to the point where these other women were able to get out, and she gave them therapy, and she gave them a place to go. And even before I was seeing the truth, my mom was doing that for people. And so, I mean, to answer your question about the branding, it was an out of body experience. And I remember asking to not do it, just like at the very last minute. I thought I'd throw it out there. Like, are you sure we have to do this? Because we were told that the brand was a symbol of the elements. We were never told anything that it had anything to do with Keith Raniere at all. It was supposed to be a process of us going against our comfort and pain to prove that we were loyal to this group. And that was kind of the way that they pitched it. And so by the time I'm being branded, I'm recognizing that the brand is much larger than what they thought. And it's an out-of-body experience for me. I just remember watching myself, and the pain was kind of beyond the point where you're feeling pain in the moment. It's like your body goes into shock at that point. So I didn't feel it until really afterwards, or it would hit certain points of my body that were close to my bones. So yeah, it was not fun. I mean, at the time I thought we were doing something that was like, whoa, this is really hard. Like getting a tattoo with all of your girlfriends. It was like, that was kind of my mindset at that point. It wasn't until later that I realized what the fuck really happened.
And when did you find out that it was his initials?
When I moved back to California.
No way.
Yes. So way too late to the party. I mean, my mom was the first person to tell me that the brand was Keith's initials. And I was like, no, it's not. I couldn't accept the truth at that point.
The plastic surgeon said you'll never fully go away, right? But you can keep trying to do it.
Well, some people have been successful with plastic surgery. I know a couple women that were able to remove their brand through that process. It's painful. I mean, you're cutting yourself open and closing up the scar repeatedly. I mean, especially someone who has had a baby might have more elasticity in that part of their body, so they could pull the skin and then close it up. I was not in that position. I don't have children. I haven't had any children yet. So I ended up actually tattooing over the brand. And I talk about that in my book and then in the series and what led up to that decision. And I actually feel really proud of what I've used to cover it, because you can't see the brand at all anymore. And that was my goal. And it was like a way for me to reclaim that part of my body.
In Seduced, the illustration of the branding session looked very satanic. It looked very just, I can't believe you guys are all just standing around naked. Who's next on the table? And they're holding you down.
That's what it was. It was satanic. It was a sadistic act. But all of those elements were kept from us, because we were being told one narrative, when really the true narrative is Keith, and he's a pervert and a pedophile and a sadist, and he wanted it to be like human sacrifice, because that is the kind of human being that he is.
I feel like you went into a black hole and you came back again. Like, or you know, I picture a yo-yo. A yo-yo goes away from the hand and then it comes back. And you're able to kind of come back. How did you do this 180 and come back?
A lot of work. I mean, a lot of work, a lot of crying, a lot of like, what the hell, who am I? Kind of soul searching and just a lot of help. And I mean, I have a family and loved ones and a mother who said to me, whatever you need, I will give to you. If you need therapy, if you need space, if you need a place to live, she gave me all of that. And so I just feel so lucky and grateful that I had that opportunity, because so many people leave groups like this and they don't have anything and they fall prey once again. And so even though, of course, I've made a lot of mistakes along the way, I still just feel really grateful that I had a safe place to go and to heal. And that's been continuous. I mean, I'm still doing things today that are related to my healing. It's not like it's one and done. I won't sugarcoat it.
Right. I do believe you're going to come out on the other side and help a lot of people, honestly. Barnes used a word earlier, and I don't know if you feel like this is appropriate, but do you ever sit back and say to yourself, oh my God, I was in a cult?
Yes, I do, because that's actually a really important step to recognize what you're involved in. And I've noticed just from the people who have come out of the group, the ones who are really hesitant to accept that are usually carrying some kind of shame or judgment about that, when really it's like, oh my God, I was in a bad relationship, or I was in a toxic work environment. It shouldn't be that shameful. I mean, we know enough now to know that nobody joins a cult. They're thinking that it's one thing and then it becomes something else, or it already is that. So I think it's a really important step to acknowledge the truth.
Well, I can acknowledge now that I am an Amazon Prime and it feels very cult-like. I mean, they've got me.
What about Apple?
Oh, Apple.
They got me every time.
And Ranieri, a little bit of a Steve Jobs wannabe, but he's just such a nerd.
He's like, not smart enough. I mean,
yeah.
And not inventive enough, that's for sure. I mean, he literally stole everything from everybody else. So that's not a very creative person.
Those listening to the podcast, be sure and go to our Instagram. It's a very exclusive. That's the only place you can watch this entire interview in its video form. And we're going to tell you again and again to go check out Seduced. It's just so well done. At what point, India, did you Google Nexium and not get the heartburn medication, but get, I'm saying, while you're in the cult, when did you finally go, you know what? What is this I'm hearing? I'm going to Google this.
You know, this is really embarrassing, but the only time I ever Googled Nexium was right after my first 5-day intensive back in 2012. And I remember kind of just poking around on the internet. I think I saw the Vanity Fair article, and I had just done these 5 days. I had met, you know, probably 30 plus people, all from the organization. I had taken their classes and I was reading the articles, and I thought, this does not match up to my experience of what I just had in the 5 days. And granted, I had never been to Albany yet. I had only been in Los Angeles and, you know, interacted with those coaches and trainers. So I just wrote it off. I was like, oh, what a nasty little article. I mean, like, they don't know these people. I've met them. And so my guard was down because my experience of them was kind of trumping the facts. And it wasn't, and I really never went back and reevaluated it, because the deeper and deeper I got in, the more I believed that what I was involved in was good. And you were also discouraged. You were really strongly discouraged from going online. So,
what were these 3 a.m. walks like? Because he would always do these walks in the middle of the night. Was he trying to get you to say like horrible things about your family?
You know, he did walks at all times of the day. I think sometimes the 3 a.m. walks were basically like him testing your loyalty and how much you were willing to do for him, like boundary testing. So I think that was why he chose that time. He made up reasons, which were that he was up all night thinking, and that's bullshit. Yeah. We know that is bullshit. They were weird. I mean, sometimes for me, they were just casual conversations that felt like I was just talking to an old friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just kind of extracting info like, oh, what was that sexual experience like? What was it like when you were in elementary school? I mean, like literally all across the board questions, just getting intel. And that's what these people do. And they make you feel comfortable enough to share more and more. And I wasn't the only one that experienced walks like that. I mean, most people said, oh, I felt like he was friendly, but weird, but friendly. So, I mean, it wasn't until much later that our relationship changed and became more sexual, I guess, if you will. I mean, it's hard for me to even call it that, but that is what happened. And that's what happened when I moved to Albany.
He doesn't look like he would even enjoy the sex. It's more about the power and
exactly.
getting you to
power. Steve, saying, that's it.
Like, he's like, I'm going to have sex with India. I'm going to do it. But then it's just the fact that I can.
Mm-hmm.
It's a power thing. Power. And that I didn't know because, I mean, I'm not like that. And none of us are. We're not like that. We don't function as like power being the ultimate goal. And it wasn't until I was working with the FBI that I really understood that these types of people go for power and control, and it's not about sex. Because I had kind of written off the sexual part because I was so compartmentalized about that experience and those experiences, because they weren't just one, that I just put it off to the side, like, don't want to think about that, don't want to go there. And it wasn't until I actually started to describe my experiences and see the similarities between many other people that I realized who this person was and that this is a predatory behavior.
He was just really good at having people keep his secrets.
When you're in a cult, you're living in a world of fear, essentially.
I felt like I was out of my body. I just remember, feel the pain, feel the pain. The love.
Feel the love.
So I read an article, and it was a great question. So I'm kind of stealing a question from a magazine article that I saw with you in it. And it says, the question was, how would you respond to somebody that says, oh, I would never get in a cult. I would never join a cult. And you mentioned how you'd be super offended by that. And, you know, for those that didn't hear about this article, tell me your answer. If someone said to you, how did you get wrapped up in a cult?
You know, I'm less offended by it nowadays. I think I've learned that it's usually just lack of education and some kind of judgment, because they think that you have to be stupid to, you know, fall victim to a cult or a cult-like situation, if you will. And I think that for people that believe that, I think it's better to look at maybe how you could be fooled rather than just assume that you could never. Because that kind of arrogance really kind of gets us in trouble, I think, including myself. Like, I've thought I could never be taken advantage of. That's not true. Because given the right set of circumstances, or maybe my own vulnerabilities, or maybe just a bad day, people are susceptible. And anyone can be susceptible to manipulation. I think it's kind of silly to assume that you could never be fooled, because I don't know. I don't think that's real. So I would probably just say something like that. And I was offended mm-hmm. before, because I was judging myself so harshly for my own decisions to, you know, either stay when there was more information telling me not to. But I had to realize like why I was there and why I stayed longer. And it just took me a while to see the truth.
India, what was the point of the guys in the cult in Nexium? Because all the sex talk is around the women, and are they there just for the money, or like, why are they there?
Oh my God. I've wondered this myself, because I feel like this story is about women and one man, and like all the other guys, all the other guys involved were kind of like his bystanders. I mean, or, you know, his enforcers. His bros. I mean, some of them innocently going along, not thinking and just participating, others much more culpable. And I think that for Keith, the men were just there to enforce what he needed and the structure, and probably bring some normalcy to it. So it didn't just look like a giant harem.
Weirdo. Some of them looked at him, though, like he was a god, which was disturbing.
They really did. Yeah. They really did. I mean, and you just don't know somebody's reason for looking for something outside of themselves. So that's also something to not that I have tried to not judge as harshly, because you don't know why someone gets to that point. Like, for me, I know why. I was 19 years old. I was looking for structure. I thought that Nexium was going to provide that for me. And I went down the rabbit hole of the coaching curriculum, but other people might have been there for different reasons. They could have thought, oh my God, I want to learn from the smartest man in the world. Like, and then they could have gone for that. I couldn't have cared less.
Everybody gets a sex mulligan. I'm assuming he's yours.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so, but I feel like I've had a couple. I mean, I won't lie.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Is there anything worse than Keith Raniere that you need to tell us about?
No.
Okay.
There really isn't. But there, I mean, there are others like him, and that's why I think Seduced is really important, because he's not the only one out there.
I have to say, watching Seduced, your mom is amazing, Katherine Oxenberg. Mm-hmm. I felt like there were times that she was doing more work than the DA's office was. And it was really starting to make me mad. They were like, well, we don't have enough information. So she was going out getting all the information. And didn't she spend like 3 years on this?
A long time. I mean, my poor mom is exhausted. And I'm trying to be there for her as much as possible now, because I try to pick up some of the slack, because I know she's really tired and she has worked so hard. And I mean, she was a mom on a mission. That's it. And she wasn't going to stop.
How long have you been with your current boyfriend, and what does he think of your story?
Well, we met actually right when I left Nexium, and he was working with the same restaurant group that I was managing, but across the street from each other. And he's my fiance now. We're engaged. And
congratulations.
I love that pizza place. I've eaten there in LA. I love Double Zero pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's his spot. He's wonderful. I mean, he supports me and what I need to do, but we both really want Nexium to be behind us and just to kind of move on and have our lives. And we just got back from a camping trip, and he does.
Oh, that's a hot topic here.
Yeah.
Camping or glamping?
I'll explain what we did, and you can judge it.
Okay.
So the week before, we drove out to Joshua Tree and we camped there. So it was car camping, and we just have a tent and a little Coleman stove, and we cook over fire because he's a chef, so that's his favorite thing to do. And then we just went for hikes. And I mean, I didn't shower for 3 days. I used wipes. I mean, it's not very glamorous, but it's definitely fun. And that's kind of what we did.
That's a toss-up, because Joshua Tree is such an epic place.
It's true.
Epic. It
so
is.
I might do that, but I need a Mercedes, the big van with internet.
Oh, you should get a Sprinter van.
Yeah,
those are really snazzy.
Those are great.
Oh, wow.
But you know, with COVID, though, I've been staying home and not showering for 3 days and using wipes. So, it's the same thing with COVID, I feel like.
We're glad we're on Zoom.
No, I do have a shower.
Yeah, no, I believe India. Yeah.
No, I don't know about you guys, but when you're home all the time, you feel like, oh, I can skip today. You know, who am I going to see?
It is true. When you don't interact with other people, I mean, it is just like camping. And there was a time when we were in total lockdown that I think I wore the same clothes for 3 days in a row.
In a healthy way, how much weight did you lose after this whole craziness, like getting stabilized?
Because
you look gorgeous. You look beautiful.
Thank you. That was really hard. I mean, I'm still getting my hormones back to normal and my body just like all checked out. I have a couple doctor's appointments and whatnot, just because I want to make sure that everything is right. Because it was a very dramatic weight loss and weight gain for me when I came out. So I lost over 20 pounds when I was there, because I had to be 106 pounds and I'm naturally more like 125. I'm 5'5". I don't weigh myself anymore out of principle. Because I feel like it was too regimented, and it also kind of created an eating disorder type behavior for me while I was in the group, because they were obsessive about calorie counting and reporting your weight. So I stopped that as just like for my own well-being. So now I got into exercise. So I started boxing and training and hiking more, so I could build back my muscle. But in between that time, I gained a lot of weight. Just while I was working with the FBI, I was living in Colorado, I was lonely, I was depressed, and I wasn't taking care of myself. So I've had to do a whole shift in like what care is, what a caring way to take care of my body is. And that has food and exercise and water all involved. And so I feel pretty good about what I have, that I have some control over that now.
Good for you. You look
so
great.
So India, there's this thing.
I feel good. I feel strong.
There's this thing called the,
oh, here we go.
You can drink a gallon of water a day. The Queefit, you can buy it on Amazon. I drink a gallon a day.
Oh,
see,
my
Barnes,
gosh.
Wait,
and Cubby, don't give me a hard time.
I love that. Okay,
yeah, it's great.
I'm writing it down.
So honestly, though, you look fantastic. And I was going to say, do you still have dreams or nightmares about all of this? Do you feel like you're 80% back, 90%, 100%?
Well, I feel like I have myself back. And I feel more me than I have since I was a kid, almost. Like, I feel like there's a part of me that came back that I had lost for a long time. I definitely have nightmares still. I mean, the other night I was having a nightmare and I woke up with this insane TMJ. I was like, oh shit, not this again. Like, clearly I was battling something in my sleep that I wasn't aware of, but it's better. I have a much better handle on it. It's not like a year ago when these things were happening to me and I couldn't understand what was going on. At least now I know, like, oh, that was a trigger. And I'm having a little reaction right now over that. Okay, we're all right. And I have to be my own coach.
What was the moment that when you left that you snapped and said, I'm getting the hell out of here? What was the thing that made you?
I wish it was that.
I mean, what was it?
It wasn't even that. It was much more subconscious than that. And I think it was my instinct because I couldn't get any work in Albany. Everyone was leaving. I think it was February 2018 that I asked Allison if I could move out of her house to Brooklyn to look for work. So I had asked permission for that. And I ended up supplying to 20 different jobs. And it was like I had the instinct to remove myself from Albany. And that was as far as I could get at that point. And then I got a job. And then my job became my like savior because all I wanted to do was just work and prove to myself that I could take care of myself and have some normalcy amongst chaos.
But like paparazzi were chasing you and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
so it wasn't normal. And I was so trying to just like be like, leave me alone. Please just let me try to process what happened. And I wasn't even there yet. I was just trying to maintain a job. It really wasn't until I met my now fiance that I felt like I could start to distance myself from all these people.
Were you going to the court every day? Were you, I mean, you didn't show, did you show up at all when he was sentenced?
Well, so there's two different things. I was a cooperating witness for 9 months. So when you are that way, you're not allowed to be in court because it can affect your testimony if they call you on the stand. So all of the witnesses, you're not allowed to talk to any of them. You're not allowed to talk to anybody really about anything that you're doing with the government. And by the time that closing arguments came, which were last summer in June, not this June, but the one before, sorry, I was allowed to go because they released me from testifying. So I went to that, and that was the first time I had gone to court, and that was the first time that I had seen Keith.
Oh.
And then after that, I decided that I wanted to speak and share my victim impact statement at his sentencing, and that was the first time where I really participated in court. And that was really hard. And that was on the 28th.
Damn. Last month, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So it's been a lot. And that amongst all of the press that we were doing, I still feel like last night, I think I must have slept 10 hours. Like I'm just catching up.
Sure. Sure.
No more 3 a.m. walks.
No.
I was going
to
say.
No, hey, someone tries to wake me up at 3 a.m. and he's like, get the hell out of here.
We were gonna force you to tape this show at 3 a.m. just to be jerks. Allison Mack, and we're gonna get off this because we could go for hours, but
sure.
Were you drawn into her celebrity, and was she drawn into her celebrity at all? Because she was on what show? Smallville?
You know, I never watched Smallville.
I didn't
know any of Allison's acting. I knew she was an actress because that was pretty well known in the community, but I didn't know any of her roles or anything. So her celebrity didn't really mean anything to me.
Got it.
I also grew up with actors.
Yeah, right. Your mom.
So, I mean, like, I grew up with actors. My stepdad's an actor. I've kind of like, that's kind of was my life. So none of that was really like, oh my God, you're an actress. Unless you're Taylor Swift or like Beyonce, I'm not really going to melt. But, but I think that for me, it was about her charisma. And she was a very charismatic, attention-grabbing person. And I wanted to be brave, like what I thought she was.
But didn't you think it was weird that she was always so hunky-dory? Hey,
oh, yeah.
Hey,
oh, yeah.
Always.
No, we were not friends. We were not friends until we didn't have a relationship until she recruited me for DOS. And then that was a forced relationship because I had to relate to her. Prior to that, I was like, okay, you're like the theater kid in school that I kind of want to get away from. But she wasn't somebody that I was naturally attracted to. She was charismatic in her position in Nexium. Like, she was really gung-ho. She was really good at it. She was excelling. So I looked up to her in that way, not necessarily like her as a person. I thought like, oh, I want to be as successful in this company as she is. That's kind of how I saw it.
Do you stay in touch with anyone? I mean, they were part of your life for so many years.
Some people. I have people who have left and people who have really like prioritized themselves and their own healing and their own lives. I'm still in contact with them. I mean, like, I chat with lots of them periodically, but people who are still loyal to the group, no.
There are some, right? There's some, there's some Keith Raniere like disciples.
Yeah.
What is wrong with these people? And I'm not grouping you into that. I'm saying after all of this, and then they're still like, oh yeah, he's the guy. Give me my sash.
I mean, it's crazy to me, but I remember when I felt that strongly about this group. Wow. I mean, yeah, I know that there's way more information now. We just went through a whole criminal trial. Like, you would think that that would shock anybody. But I also remember feeling so strongly that what we were doing was good. And that's just how dangerous indoctrination is. I mean, like, to me, they are an example of what maybe like people might have thought about the Manson girls, because that is an extreme example, and that is an extreme setting of people who have literally, like, they don't have their lives anymore. They're just acting out of Keith's wishes.
Well, can we say goodbye to your cat?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me see if I can get them before we sign off.
Oh, got it. We have to have the cat.
Rice and Beansy. Hold on.
Come on, Rice and Beansy. Oh,
is Rice out here?
We got to have the cat.
I do want to find out if she's signed on for any more television appearances.
Oh, yeah.
Who? Rice?
Oh, you. Is that one or two?
This is Rice.
Oh, there's one.
Rice.
Hey, Rice. She's a little girl. She's annoyed with me right now.
Yeah, and Rice is like, listen, I'm not doing press.
Yeah, she's like, I told you, Mom, I'm over these interviews.
Oh, my gosh. This is hysterical. And
this is Beansy. He's my big chubby chub. And they're brother and sister. So they were 8 months.
They're adorable.
So funny. Leslie had one last question.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, because, you know, of Seduced, do you think you'll do any more television appearances or, you know, another docuseries?
I don't have anything scheduled right now. I would love to continue to produce. I thought that was totally reinvigorating and amazing experience.
I bet.
And I'm probably going to start writing again.
That's great.
Really soon. So I think that's kind of where I'm focused on, and also my advocacy work and the work with my mom's foundation. So that's kind of what I'm focused on. If the producing opportunities come and they're the right match, I would totally love to do that. But I don't have anything scheduled right now.
Tell everyone about your audiobook.
Oh, sure. It's out now on Audible. It's called Still Learning, a memoir that I wrote and narrated.
That's awesome. And there's a hardcover too, right? There's an actual book?
No, there isn't.
Oh, it's just Audible?
Yeah, it's just Audible. I thought about it, but then we just tried this strategy first and just kind of like got it out there sooner and in time with the docuseries, because I think my book actually fills in a lot of what was not able to fit into the docuseries. So it kind of shows you all of the red flags that I missed, and we'll hope that anyone who listens won't.
We're going to get beaten up because we didn't ask this and this and this and this and this. So people just chill. There's only so much time. There's only so much India to go around.
Aww.
India, thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
We really appreciate this. I think you're so brave and we really appreciate
brave.
Yeah, watch Seduced.
Nice.
I'm telling you, get the star 7-day free trial if you don't want to pay.
Yeah,
at least get in. You can binge 4 episodes very quickly. It's very intriguing. India Oxenberg, thank you very much. That's it for the Pop Culture Show. We'll see you next week. Bye, India.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. That was so fun. I could have talked to you forever, but maybe we'll do another one.
We'll keep going.
We'll do another one soon when I have something else to talk about.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you, India.
Bye, guys.
Get exclusive video content when you follow the Pop Culture Show on Instagram. Unlock full video interviews and video bits you can't get anywhere else. Instagram.com/thepopcultureshow.